Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the July 12, 2020 session, focusing on Matthew 13, verses 1 through 9 and 18 through 23. Good soil. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
And I'm David Adams.
Well, it's good to be back with everyone after being away for a couple of episodes. But I did listen in and enjoyed all the conversations. So our listeners can't see me, but you know we're doing these over using Zoom in part, and so that allows me to put a creative background up. So my background today is an orange and blue Lamborghini tractor, which is. Which is an unusual sight, yes. I was thinking agriculturally, and so I'm curious for the rest of you. Are you a gardener? Have you been a gardener? What's your gardening level?
Can it be negative?
Sure.
No, I have tried to garden before. I planted a garden once, and as I do most things, went way over the top the first time I tried something. The only thing that grew were jalapeno peppers, and I grew those amazingly. I mean, like, so many jalapeno peppers that I had no idea what to do with them all. Nothing else grew well. And my mom tells a story that I wanted an aloe vera plant one time, and my mom has quite the green thumb. And so she had an aloe vera plant, and she split it, and she repotted half of it because she was going to bring it to me. Well, the one she had designated for me died very quickly. And so what she surmised was that it chose to commit plant suicide rather than die slowly at my house, because that's what would happen. I kill plants slowly. Yeah. No, I am terrible at gardening and growing green things.
Yes, my wife has a very green thumb, but sadly I don't. But I can follow directions, so she puts me to work nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. My wife does the same thing. She likes to do flowers, mostly, but this year, like a lot of other people, we're discovering that we have to start potting vegetables and putting them out on the back deck there so we can grow some things of our own. We often do that anyway. But both of us grew up out in the country, and both of us grew up in families where we grew a lot of our own food. So yeah. I still think I have permanent back strain from all the green beans that we've had to put in and harvest and all that kind of stuff. But at least I've gotten over my fear of bees, because we had beehives too, and, and maintaining those was an interesting challenge. I know what really good honey tastes like. I can tell you the flower that they used for any given honey, because they all have a certain taste, and I grew up tasting different ones. So I got a pretty good farm background. And at one point, even I worked in high school, I worked for a local farmer helping him get his hay in. Which was backbreaking, very difficult work. And it turned out that I didn't know at the time, but I'm allergic to grass.
Oh.
And it made it way more difficult than it needed to be. So I'm happy to say that now that I'm old, my farming days are behind me, but we still keep a finger in the soil every now and then.
Yes. Well, my story is similar to yours, Dave, in the sense that I grew up with a gardening dad. My father kept a large garden. I don't know, quarter acre, maybe a third acre. It was big. And we grew everything from cantaloupes and watermelons and tomatoes and purple hull peas and onions there were okra and squash and zucchini. I mean, it was quite a feat to keep it going. And so most of my Saturday mornings were getting up early as dad pulled me out of bed to throw me into the garden to work. but I haven't really continued that tradition. Regina and I will go looking for plants sometimes, and our favorite phrase, this is Regina's really, but she'll go, "Oh, that's a beautiful plant. I'll bet we could kill it."
I bet you wouldn't if you had a Lamborghini tractor to take care of it.
Well, that's right. That is true. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, I saw this when we were on a trip with family in Italy last year, so I couldn't help but take a photo. Because how often do you see a Lamborghini tractor? I mean, seriously.
So. It's a little country and a little rock and roll right there.
Tell you. Oh, boy. little Osmond reference for Bert.
Nice. Somebody's got to hold down the fort when he's not here.
That's right. I'm a very poor substitute.
We are all poor substitutes for Bert. It is true.
Well, speaking of Bert, Bert is away for this episode and the next one. But we are excited to have David Adams back with us, filling in for Bert. And David, I think you're going to help get us started.
Sure. These days, as a pastor of a small church, I get to preach a lot more often than I used to. Having moved from my days of reckless youth to days of reckless old age, I have this constant fear that my memory is going. And as a result, I'm telling people the same stories over and over. It happens to the best of us. And even though I'm not the best of us, I think I'm good enough to be suffering from that too. So it is that I approach familiar passages of Scripture with this nagging fear that I've already said everything about it somewhere to some people. It's like those annoying stories that we old people seem to keep repeating. These Scriptures we're talking about today have found their way down into our bones. We might not listen to them so closely anymore. We sort of get a been there, done that feeling as we get to the point that we're reminded of how all those stories were heard in Sunday school, and we remember those times when they were brilliantly preached by someone. So it is that when I hear the parable of the seeds, a couple of thoughts immediately spring into mind. First, I am reminded that I am not a farmer. And even when I raised some crops, I never raised the kind that people could just toss out there. Like most people these days, I've not had a lot of experience with slinging a bag of seeds over my shoulder and just tossing them around to see what came up. When we think of sowers these days, we think of hyper-expensive machines that regular farmers just can't afford, distributing chemically coated super seeds in some highly efficient manner. A lot of engineering goes into this. And while it might be a triumph of science, it has taken us all away from the land. When Jesus was talking here, he was talking to people who are not very far away from the land. So, while we hear his words and need to have them explained to us even more than original audiences did, we lack some of the visceral connection he was trying to make. The other thought that springs to mind is one of those stories, again, I repeat way too often. But it seems to fit here. There was once a preacher who got so caught up in his message that he tossed his notes away and started freestyling his sermon. And I have to admit, I'm doing that a lot these days too. But as this preacher got going, he started getting louder and louder. He named names and called out his community's sin and indifference. He stomped and ranted and pointed and even sang a little just to get his point across. At the end of the sermon, everyone in the room had been exposed to the Spirit as it laid bare the Word of God and called people to repent and become true followers of Jesus Christ. And as the crowd was leaving, during that post-service handshake that so many churches do, the head of the deacons came up to him and said, "Wow, great sermon. You really told them." That's where the parable of the seeds hits me most of the time, but especially now. Our society is at a pivotal moment, and one that we should be talking about for decades to come. The struggle against a deadly pandemic has raised questions about what it means to be a true neighbor and how we might be human together. In the midst of that, people have had to take to the streets to demand that we address the injustice of our society's original sin of dehumanizing each other, creating slavery, genocide, and generations of injustice and prejudice, things that have completely corrupted our institutions and our relationships. People now are starting to call out our sin, and all of us are guilty, and they demand that we change. The word is being spread out on our streets. So now what's going to happen? Some people have proved that the call to care for others by doing something so simple as maybe wearing a mask is beyond their capacity. Probably in a society where being asked to care for others is viewed as some sort of infringement on a sacred right, the call to address the even larger sin of racism is falling on a rocky path where nothing will happen. The little birds of the media and other hate groups can easily gobble the word up before anything happens, or even twist it into yet another nasty weeds. other people really care for their fellow humans. Just as long as we don't ask too much of them. We'll wear a mask, just as long as we can get our hair cut. We'll socially distance, unless we really want to go somewhere. We'll admit to other people's racism, just so long as we can take advantage of the advantages racism has given us. Some of us will even make pitying noises when we see a young person shot or beaten. But later we'll question the bad things that person must have done in order to receive such punishment. Since Bert's not here, I have a Steven Taylor quote that fits this. Convenience is the law you keep, and your compassion's ankle deep. Some of us care, really care about our fellow human beings. We want people to stay healthy and safe. We want justice and freedom from the shackles of prejudice. We want to do whatever we can to make right the many things that are wrong with today's world. But we live in a world where we are like voices crying in the wilderness. We consume media that works to desensitize us to other people. We tolerate our racist friends. We try to make peace with our family and friends by not speaking out about the things that we know are right. We go along to get along, and in the process, we choke out the very word to which we ought to cling. Many of us want to be those good soil people that Jesus was talking about. We want to do something that helps, and we're ready to act when the call comes, assuming we can hear it as a call. There's a key phrase in the parable, the one who hears the word and understands it. That's our task. We hear the word. We hear all kinds of words. What we do with it is up to us. There's a reason why so many people are willingly ready to risk their lives by taking to the streets around the world. Sure, some people aren't there for the right reasons, but a far, far greater number of people are there for the right reasons. From the nurses who blocked traffic to call attention to the pandemic, to the crowd that laid on a bridge with their hands behind their back to proclaim, "I can't breathe." Many of these people are there because whether they know it or not, they are becoming the good soil. But it all starts with listening.
David, I really appreciate your Bible background there. And I have to admit, I have, like you, I have studied and preached this parable 100 times. But I will admit that the tactic I'll often take, or the focus I will often give, will be rather than chastise this very extravagant farmer just flinging seed anywhere, Jesus seems to like the guy. In fact, he praises this behavior. So I've often encouraged my church to replicate that behavior, to not worry about the rocky soil or putting seed in all the right places, but living the kind of life where we trust that God will cause our actions to come to fruition, that God will prepare that soil for our good works to take root or whatever. I don't know that I have given as much thought to what you raised this morning, and that is perhaps we are to be that good soil that can receive, you know, all that God is trying to do and bring about in our world. And I don't really have anything inspirational to say about that other than to say, that's really running around in my mind how maybe I need to look at this from the other side and see how we are, how our behavior is to be the good soil for this extravagant farmer. I don't know, maybe you can talk a little more about why you were led to that perspective, but I think it's really, really interesting.
Well, just because Bert's not here and someone's got to hold this up, my other Steve Taylor quote actually drives me to this. And there's a song he does called "Jesus is for Losers." And one of the last things he says in the song is, "They don't grade here on a curve. We both know what we deserve." You know, and in America, we seem to think that we deserve lots of good things. You know, we deserve this freedom to go out and spread disease. We deserve to be able to treat people like we want to. You know, it's we think that we deserve something special, that God's supposed to treat us in some special way, and society's got to get out of our way and give us what we want. And when we don't get that, we complain. Meanwhile, people who have real complaints, who are really exposed to injustice, are viewed as interlopers for disrupting our party. Mm. You know, I just don't think that's what God intends.
I enjoy this take on this particular parable. I think this week and next week that we're looking, the parables that we're looking at, there's a way to flip them around. Whereas often when we have taught about them, it's been about people on the outside. We focused it on other people. And I think that flipping it around and looking at our own selves and our own lives is really important. And so I'm totally on board for this, that the point of the parable is about listening. The point is, how can I hear what is being taught and how will it take root in me? How do we go about the process of becoming good soil? I think that that's an interesting thing to think about. Like, what prepares us? How do we get rid of the rocks? How do we get rid of the thorns? How do we put moisture into our soil? I'm sticking with a metaphor here, so that we can become rich and a good seed bed for this kind of learning and listening to take place.
If I had to answer that in one word, I'd say intentionality. I mean, at some point, we're going to have to take hard looks at ourselves on purpose instead of by accident. You know, we're right now we're driven to take these hard looks by the events out in the streets. But before that happened, were we really looking at ourselves very much?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that looking at ourselves, even when there's not some outside impetus telling us to look at ourselves. I've noticed a few people, you know, social media drives so much of our lives now, but I've seen some people post, if your newsfeed has gone back to normal, Black Lives still matter, right? So kind of acknowledging that, oh, we all flew through and we've all posted our stuff and said what we were going to read and how we were going to learn. And then it all has started to fade. But that's work that has to continue to be done, even when there's not this constant reminder of it. So yeah, I think that learning to look at ourselves and to see, like, if I'm going to criticize somebody else, I need to look and see where that is in me too.
Hmm. Yeah, I think I heard this referred to recently as white allergies.
Oh, that's new. What did you mean?
There's a YouTube broadcast. Was it a difficult conversation with a Black man?
Yeah.
I saw that. It was
uncomfortable conversations with a Black man. Sorry.
Okay.
And they talk about the concept of white allergies, in that just like regular allergies, we have things that weaken us, but we're not aware of them because we've gotten them by birth. And, you know, and they're not major things. Like when you catch a bad cold or something like this, you know it because you're feeling sick. If you're sick to your stomach and having the flu, you know it because, you know, things are different. But an allergy creeps up on you and you can have it your whole life and it's coloring the way you live, but you never know it as an allergy. You just think you're feeling bad that day, but right. it's deeply buried in your DNA and in who you are. Again, we have white allergies, and that's kind of a way of being prejudiced. We don't see it because it's so ingrained in us. We're never trained to see that.
Absolutely.
Nikki, the question you asked, which I think is a wonderful one, how do we prepare ourselves to be that good soil? How are we formed into good soil? And what I'm thinking about is, you know, we've admitted at the top of this podcast that, you know, that I don't have a green thumb, but I have been told over and over that nature desires diversity. Mm. In other words, one of the hardest things to grow is a field or a yard of just grass. You know, the amount of water and compost and chemicals and to have lush green only grass blades, no weeds, is a very difficult thing because nature desires that kind of diversity. And so if we want to use that metaphor, which I think is a good one, part of the ways I think we are formed into good soil is to ensure that we listen to diverse voices, that we have a broad spectrum of voices that we're listening to, not only in the media that we consume, but in the authors that we read or the people on social media that we follow. It's been a couple years now, but I sort of overheard a challenge on social media. You know, how many had to do with black women, and I don't even remember the specific context, but someone said, "How many black women do you follow?" Mm-hmm. And so I immediately looked, and I was ashamed of myself. And so I made an intentional effort to follow more black women, and I began to see and hear differently because I was seeing and hearing different things. Mm. And I don't know if I'm answering the question, but that's one of the ways I think we can become good soil to all that God is trying to teach us, particularly in this moment, by listening to one another. Dave, that's how you ended your wonderful Bible background. It starts with listening. For me, that means listening diversely, if that's makes sense.
Absolutely. I love that. I'd heard that too. I heard it called a social media audit, taking an audit of all of your social media, which I think is fantastic, making sure that you're following different people. And I would add, and I think it's because I know our human propensity to listen for what we don't agree with, right? So when we begin to follow diverse voices, we are going to hear things that don't resonate because we don't have anything to connect with it. We're going to hear things that we just don't agree with because we've never been taught that, or maybe we don't agree with it. But I think that when we choose to do that, we have to orient ourselves to listening for where the connecting points are. And for listening, if that was my experience, how would I experience, you know, how would it make me feel? Mm-hmm. And listen for the truth in what's being said. I think we have to shift the way that we listen. Rather than listening to argue or listening to refute, listen to connect.
Mm. And that's hard because it finally dawned on me. Okay, so I really love Apple News. Mm-hmm. On my phone, it gets me and it serves up news that I'm interested in. It's very dangerous too because its focus is to learn what I read, what I want, and then serve that to me.
Right.
And it becomes this very insular vacuum almost. And so I love it, but it's not good for me. That works counter to what I know I ought to be doing to be good soil. Mm. I mean, maybe I'm being a little too hard on it, but that's what comes to mind.
What you're describing is we all kind of have the ability now to form our own bubbles that we live in, think and listen in. And this whole idea of having a more diverse, you know, doing an audit of your social media to make sure you have more diverse voices there, all that is key, I think. So back to Nikki's question, which, you know, how do we prepare ourselves to be good soil? As I've been listening to us discuss this, a couple of kind of practices seem to be evident. One of the practices that I hear being described is humility, the awareness that we don't know it all, have it all figured out. Our experiences aren't the best, the only ones, the normative ones. Humility calls us to take a posture that is far less defensive and acknowledges right out the gate that we have things to learn. And I think that's a good practice that I hear us describing. It's hard to do. It's very hard, especially I think as we get older, we kind of feel like maybe we've got more figured out or we've cemented our views. But it's still, I think, so important for us to be able to listen. We have to practice humility. The other practice that I've heard is curiosity. This interest in interest in mystery, this interest in what I don't know or haven't gotten figured out, curiosity about, like Nikki was describing, another person's experiences and perspective. Because I don't know what it's like to not be me. So maybe, and I'm sure there's a bigger list, but maybe identifying kind of spiritual practices, even if you will, of humility, of curiosity, that lead us to be better listeners and thus be better soil where something could take hold that otherwise wouldn't.
Daniel, I want to go back to this idea about having growing a yard of grass is one of the hardest things to grow, and it's because it lacks diversity. I thought that was such an interesting concept to think about as it relates to this. And I think with David's comments about the need for humility and curiosity in this process, that it really, those values go against this need that we seem to have of having right belief or right knowledge. And so we're taught in Christian circles, in our church settings, we are often taught this is the right way to believe, this is the right thing to think, these are the right actions to take. And when we learn these things, it's like we shut down, there's nothing else allowed in. If there's anything that comes in that we even think is gonna mess up that system that we have in place, then we push it out and we push it away, because it diversifies that belief system. It makes it complex and less simple. And so I don't know, I think that there's something in that we have to figure out how to put away that need to lock everything down into place and to have a system that is unbreakable, and rather see that a life of faith is something that needs some flexibility in it in order to be able to grow. I don't, does that connect with what we're talking about here?
I think that connects a lot. Actually, as you were talking, I was thinking about soil again. Well, when we think about it, good soil has been through stuff. Things have died on it and decomposed. It's been rained on. You don't even know. It's been through so many random events, but it's made it into a good, dark soil that you can work, because it's so soft and malleable. Bad soil's got lots of rocks in there that won't be moved. Mm. You know, it's got hard positions that it's taken that can't be budged.
Yeah.
Pried out of it, if anything at all. Whereas good soil, you can work with it because it doesn't grip these ideas.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm being metaphorical here, but doesn't grip them quite so tightly. You know, it's been worked a bit, and it's been around, and it's had people walk on it, and it's done lots of things. And it's like you're saying, we tend to ideologically get to points where we take these hard and fast positions that lock things out, that make it really hard for us to be good soil, because we just won't let go of certain things. You know, we keep saying all the time, somebody's a hammer and every problem in the world's a nail. we tend to get that way with our thinking sometimes.
Yeah.
We can't have the possibility of a soft way to approach people that welcomes things and nurtures them once they land on us. We just can't do it, because we still have those little stiff points we want to have that make it hard for everybody.
Mm.
What a fascinating image that we've been given. Sometimes, you know, the scriptures give us these more agricultural, earthy kinds of ways of thinking. And they've generated wonderful conversation for us today, even though none of us really feel like we have great green thumbs. We understand this. And I think we might even go a step further. It's so easy for us, I think, as modern persons, to see ourselves as apart from rather than connected to. And we define ourselves by our individuality, which makes us unique and independent, rather than that which we connect ourselves to. And when we start talking about agricultural kinds of imagery, it is also a bit of wisdom that is brought that reminds of us of our connectedness to creation, to God's work, to one another, that perhaps part of what our faith is calling us to is to understand that maybe what defines us and grows us is more about those things that connect us to one another than the things that make us individuals. Anyway, maybe Wendell Berry says it better. You know, that wonderful farmer, environmentalist, and poet. He's written a, a poem about sowing the seed. And I hear in it this sense of connected with and even like integrated within. Anyway, see what you hear. Sowing the seed, my hand is one with the earth. Wanting the seed to grow, my mind is one with the light. Hoeing the crop, my hands are one with the rain. Having cared for the plants, my mind is one with the air. Hungry and trusting, my mind is one with the earth. Eating the fruit, my body is one with the earth. May we all find opportunities to make ourselves better soil, better listeners, to practice curiosity and humility and connection. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.